Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello listeners. After we recorded this podcast, we had some breaking news on Sunday night. Luis Rubiales on Piers Morgan's Uncensored TV show resigned as RFEF president, stating that he would not be able to continue in his role given the FIFA suspension and other measures taken against him. In the sensational interview, he explained his decision. So here's a clip of how it sounded.
About my resignation, yes, I'm going to do.
You're going to resign?
Yeah, because I cannot continue my work. You have to focus in your dignity and to continue your life, because if not, probably you are going to damage people you love and the sport you love.
He also issued a statement to the Federation explaining his decision, citing the damage it had caused to Spanish football and its reputation, as well as the 2030 World Cup bid. He also refused to acknowledge any wrongdoing, calling it a disproportionate campaign full of falsehoods, and said that he has faith in the truth and that he will work to make sure this prevails. We'll let you be the judge for yourselves, listeners. So from now, enjoy the podcast we recorded earlier today.
Correct set of pace from Nico Williams. Yamal! Oh! History! Yet more of it! He's only 16, but now Lamine Yamal becomes Spain's youngest ever goal scorer. And didn't he take it well?
Hello everyone, and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. It's our free pod for all listeners and subscribers. I'm your host, Matt Clark, delighted to be joined by Paco Pollitt, fresh from a stag weekend in Albacete. Paco, how are you feeling?
Not exactly that fresh, but yeah, feeling pretty tired overall. I want to take the chance to give a big shout out to my friend Pablo, who is getting married next month, mid-October. And yeah, we enjoyed a pretty hectic weekend over at Albacete, and it's, you know, world-famous fair. Not really world-famous because it has many, many interesting things, but because of, obviously, the party atmosphere that is, you know, impregnating the whole city for, I believe, two consecutive weekends. Oof. So a few rough days upcoming for many people going over there to Albacete.
Ah, suerte, Pablo. Well, I'll tell you who is feeling fresh, and that is Spain, because they're coming off the back of a thumping, historic 7-1 win away in Georgia to get their qualification campaign firmly back on track. Plenty of history made here, Paco. Álvaro Morata got a hat-trick. Lamine Yamal became Spain's youngest ever player and then youngest ever scorer on the same day. 16 years and 57 days old he was on that night, taking Gavi's records on both occasions. Just an incredible talent. Paco, first of all, the entire game as a whole, how good was Spain?
Well, Spain were far superior, and actually I'd say that Georgia were quite lucky to not allow even more goals, because if you see the, you know, the game, the first couple of chances for Spain were very, very clear. They had almost 2-3 big chances before the 20th minute when Spain were able to finally open the scoreline. But yeah, overall I think that, you know, both squads were at two entirely different levels. And you could actually see that. I believe that the rain pouring during the second half actually was an advantage for the home side. First up, because they were able to score and you know, narrow the gap at the beginning of the second half with not the best, you know, not the best performance by Unai Simón. He wasn't, you know, in tip-top shape in that play when Jacket Tazpe was the one in charge of scoring the 4-1. But overall, you know, so superior that you can't actually really draw interesting conclusions from this game, regardless of, you know, Morata scoring three, Jamal being the youngest player to score, also Nico Williams scoring, Dani Olmo with that, you know, typical Dani Olmo play on the wing and taking advantage of a rebound and finally being able to finish the play. Overall, it was a very easy game for Spain. They could have scored even more goals, but yeah, we have a number of players, names here and there that we can pinpoint, even though as a collective, I think that you shouldn't really draw any big conclusions from this game.
Yeah, as we saw in the World Cup, Spain beat Costa Rica 7-0 and then failed to win another game in the tournament. So yeah careful to not get carried away. It's the first time Georgia have ever conceded seven in an international in their history. 33 shots from Spain, 12 of them were on target, 4.19 XG, an absolute roller of a performance. You mentioned Dani Olmo. He likes playing in Tbilisi because, as we discussed on the podcast last week, he scored that 90th minute winner the last time Spain were in Georgia, and that was a crucial, very tense 2-1 win. So for them to now win 7-1 shows potentially either Georgia going one way and Spain going the other, or potentially just, as you say, a really hot night for Spain. But let's talk about the history maker. He was on the front covers of all the major sporting newspapers in Spain, Marca, AS, Mundo Deportivo, and Sport, of course, in Barcelona. An incredible record he took, not just in Spain, but he's the youngest player of any European nation to score in any game since 1906. So that's the kind of level we're talking about here. He's obviously broke out for Barca at the start of this season, and for him to come in and make his mark, and what a goal it was. Just, I mean, he's an incredible talent, isn't he, Paco?
Yeah, I think that in that sense, you have to give credit to both Xavi and Barca for really betting their hopes on this season and hinging most of their potential chances of doing well in any competition on this kid. Because ultimately, you know, we did see a very recent example with Ansu Fati only, I believe, 3 years ago, a couple of seasons ago, with Barca, you know, putting all of the pressure on top of him. And ultimately, injuries were the ones to stop him on his tracks. Everyone knows what happened with Ansu, you know, leaving Barca last summer, trying to once again regain or recover his best form. And obviously that is also a big blow to the Spanish national team's chances, because Ansu Fati was also destined to become a very, you know, a crucial key figure in the key role player inside the squad. Lamine Yamal is having more or less that kind of prospects in his future, but at the same time, he's been delivering very, very consistently. You know, in the same way Ansu Fati was a bit more, I wouldn't say intermittent in Spanish, intermittent. He was able to score in one game and the following one don't really having an impact. Lamine Yamal is able to have an impact in every single game. You know, even if he comes from the bench or especially as a starter in the last few games for Barca, he has been deserving all of the high praise that he's been receiving. And, you know, people calling him the next big thing. So far, they are 100% accurate on their assessment. And in this game, you know, it was his first ones for Spain, and he seemed to be playing for the Spanish national side all of his life, even though he's only 16. And he was very comfortable playing on the wing, very comfortable with his, you know, diagonal runs inside the center half of the pitch, and finally, you know, scoring in the second half his first goal for the Spanish national side. I think that all of the praise being received by this kid is well deserved, and you know, I'm pretty hopeful that he can avoid all of the pitfalls that eventually plagued Ansu Fati's career and become, as I said, a key player for Spain in the future.
A sensational first game for Lamine Yamal. And as you say, let's hope he's not played into the ground like Ansu and potentially Pedri as well have been in recent seasons. Yeah, so as we say, Manuel Ashvili in the Georgia goal, Valencia player, conceded seven. Do you think, how did you assess his performance? Do you think he was at fault for any of the goals, or was he just kind of the sole line of defence in a pretty ramshackle Georgian defence?
Yeah, overall, I think that the defense and the whole squad is more to blame than the keeper. I think that in most of the goals, Mamardashvili was just unable to do anything. He had a couple of good saves, as I said earlier. Spain had the chance to score even more goals. And hopefully he isn't going to really notice this kind of hard blow by allowing 7 goals in his following game for Valencia, which, by the way, remember, he once again will face Álvaro Morata only a couple of days later in that Valencia-Atletico de Madrid game. But yes, you know, Valencia's keeper really couldn't do anything. Most of the plays were very clear chances for Spain, and they obviously capitalized on those opportunities. And Mamardashvili was in Spain. We often say estaba vendido. You know, it's not he had no chance. You know, absolutely no chance of doing anything. So I don't think that he's going to be really worried about it, even though it's a very harsh scoreline on him.
A quick word on Álvaro Morata, because his last two appearances, he scored 2 in the 7-0 win over Rayo, and he scored a hat-trick in a 7-1 win over Georgia. So for Morata, it is absolutely raining goals at the moment. He's now moved up to 33 international goals. He's closing in on a really elite list of the top Spanish scorers. He's only a couple behind David Silva. And he's just scaling the heights, isn't he? And for many, he's a divisive figure, but his record is fantastic.
Yeah, for most of his career, my main gripe with Morata was actually that for being a number 9, he wasn't clinical enough for a top elite number 9. And that is an issue which, in my view, really plagued him back in the day when he played for Real Madrid, later playing for Juve, obviously, in his tenure at Atletico Madrid. But as you said, it seems that, you know, he might have been practicing or something has, you know, clicked recently, or I don't know the reason, but he has been much more focused in that commitment to scoring in the first couple of games this season. And as you said, you know, 5 goals in his last 2 appearances, both for his team and for the Spanish national team. I think that for the better of the world or for the worse, he's Spain's number 9 at this point. And the Spanish national team has to not endure, that wouldn't be the proper verb, but has to do them, try to get the most out of him, okay? As long as no other true reliable number 9 appears. After we've seen a number of different, you know, tenures or eras with relevant strikers, everyone remembers, you know, Raúl González back in the day. Later, the succession took place and David Villa came in. David Villa and Fernando Torres, they were complementary on a number of levels. Villa was, you know, the really, really specialist, the real specialist in that sense of being able to score, especially in clutch moments, as we did see in the 2010 World Cup. But after them, you know, the number 9 spots has been always up for grabs. And we have seen many examples of players coming and going. Joselu, we have seen Borja Iglesias, we've seen, or we didn't see, better said, Iago Aspas. With
Rodrigo Moreno. Rodrigo
Moreno too. But nobody has really made the number 9 spot in Spain his own. And maybe Morata is the one with more, power to really claim that spot at this point. Because he has experience, he has the numbers so far. He has obviously taken advantage of a very good 3-4 years of Spain's competitive prowess under Luis Enrique, you know, getting to very far in the Nations League, and even though the World Cup was a failure overall, I think that Spain have been doing quite well in the last 3-5 years, and Morata was there to, you know, capitalize on that front. But yeah, I think that if he keeps being this consistent so for the rest of the season and the rest of the competitions he's involved, he's going to be very beneficial for Atletico Madrid. I would even say that if Griezmann steps up to the plate in the way he did that season and Morata keeps scoring, I would say that Atletico are a big Champions League and La Liga contender. And also, obviously, for Spain, the chances of, you know, making it into the Euro 2024 and, you know, the following League of Nations qualifiers, I think that he's going to be hands down the number nine, and he will have done all of the merits necessary to be.
Mm. Yeah, well, next up for Spain is a home game against Cyprus. It's been played in Granada, Nuevo Las Cármenes. And that will be played on Tuesday evening. We'll review that one in our midweek pod coming up, so look out for that. Just a final couple of points. I suppose Luis de la Fuente, there was criticism before the game. And then some of the press and radio were talking about his kind of vindication of this is now his team, the 7-1 win, really kind of rubber stamps his position as coach, and there's no doubts anymore. It was interesting that he used a lot of his players that he brought through the under-21s. I know Fabian Ruiz had a very good performance. How do you see his kind of position as the coach? Obviously, it's a fantastic result. Do you see him now having continuity for some time?
Yeah, I don't expect change happening as long as the whole turmoil inside the Spanish Federation keeps going. You know, I think that in a moment where nothing is really set in stone inside the Real Federación Española de Fútbol, I think that they are going to try to touch as little as possible everything which is going on with the men's side. Obviously, the women's team is a whole completely different issue. But I think that once Luis de la Fuente came, into the spotlight and asked for forgiveness and apologized, said he was sorry for the whole, clapping at Rubiales controversy, no further action is going to be taken against him, which is weird, in my view. And, I think that they are going to try to touch as little as possible, try to, get all of the different elements into a bunker, like relationship between the press and the media and the Spanish national side. Because what they really are striving for is for, I wouldn't say a relaxed atmosphere inside the national team, but they want to be the least disturbed possible, okay? Luis de la Fuente really wants to build up his own personality into the squad. It's going to be tough, even though he has the advantage of, as you said, bringing in some of the players who were really important with the under-21s. We have seen that, for example, back in the day, Abel Ruiz, who was the, captain for the under-17s, under-19s, under-21s. He has been also called with the grown-ups, you could say. And that kind of continuity is going to be, I believe, more and more kept in the future by De La Fuente, because he wants to really bring in players who he perceives as his own, which he has already coached in the under-21s or even in the under-19s 3 years ago. He really can rely on their judgment and their performance, and slowly brushing away players who can be reminiscent of the Luis Enrique era, and that is something that we are going to be seeing slowly but steadily in the following months.
Yep, indeed. Continuity for now. Coming on the day, we're just recording this not long after the breaking news that Germany have sacked Hansi Flick, just a few months away from the home Euros. So just goes to show that it's not easy, this international arc. There's a lot of factors involved, and Flick has paid the price for a very poor run of form.
Yeah, but, I think that is something which could be more or less expected after what happened last weekend. The level of demand in that squad is very, very high, because they are expected to deliver greatness. And whenever they fall short of those kind of expectations, criticism always ensues. And Rudi Völler was very harsh. Many of the German press was incredibly damning on the management. And Flick was not very ceremoniously dismissed. And by the way, Völler is going to be in charge as a placeholder manager till the following one comes in. But yeah, really not the best perspectives for Germany, as you know, the Euro 2024 is slowly coming into the horizon. I think that they are going to improve. Always Germany needs to be really considered in any big tournament, but yeah, things not looking really well for the Germans.
Yeah, Marc-André ter Stegen very frustrated with his defenders in front of him last night, and Gundogan saying after the game, well, perhaps we're not as good as we think we are. So yeah, a lot of self-reflection needed for Germany. And the announcement coming just as their basketball team were proclaimed world champions. Yeah. So unreal.
It could be more or less that, all of the smoke and mirror stuff, you know, taking advantage of a big sports or an entertainment event to, you know, quietly announce a big shift in the football world in Germany. But yeah, overall, I think that the main reason for Flick failing is that following through after such an iconic 12 years, I believe it were, being managed by Joachim Löw. He replaced me in, I believe, 2021, only a couple of years ago.
Yep.
It was going to be a very, very tough couple of shoes to fill. And ultimately, as I said earlier, the demands and expectations of the German fans couldn't be met upon, and that's why a change has happened.
Indeed. Just before we move away from the internationals and go to a break, I just want to put the Lamine Yamal age into more context. So he was born in the summer of 2007, and the previous Spain game before his birth had players starting for them as follows: Pepe Reina, Sergio Ramos, Marchena, Javi Navarro, Capdevila, David Silva, Cesc Fabregas, Joaquin, Iniesta, Xabi Alonso, and David Villa. So incredible, some of those names, some of whom are still playing, and they literally were playing for Spain before he was born.
And the manager was Luis Aragonés.
Yep.
A very questioned Luis Aragonés, with his, you know, his role as the Spain's national team manager put into jeopardy almost after every single game, because many people don't want to be reminded of that and remember that. But I do remember that, especially the press, which is set in Madrid, or located in Madrid, which is national press over here in Spain, were very, very critical, very, very harsh on Luis Aragonés, because he was the one who decided that Raúl wasn't going to be called nevermore for the national side, that David Villa was going to be the next number 7. Ultimately, Luis Aragonés was right, and the national press, as it sometimes happens, was wrong.
Indeed. And on that note, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about a new arrival at Villarreal, and maybe a bit more about Raúl himself, and then also another man we just mentioned, Sergio Ramos. Join us after the break.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. There's no La Liga this weekend, but we have plenty still to talk about. And Villarreal have made a change of coach over the international break. Paco, there were lots of rumours that it would be Raúl. Instead, it's Pacheta. Your take on that, please.
Well, in our current episode of the International Break Lowdown, which should be renamed whenever there's a break in La Liga, yeah, we have to talk obviously about Villarreal, which is one of the biggest names in the first four games of the league after Quique Setién was sacked. In my view, properly sacked, and he never should have begun the season because, you know, the locker room couldn't stand him. He couldn't stand the locker room. He was just this kind of, you know, random guy. I know there are many Quique Setién believers out there. Most of them are listeners, by the way, and I give them a shout out. But, you know, he was never the proper manager for the job, and we saw that in the first four games of the league. He was sacked, and the replacement, you know, back in the day, Villarreal had this kind of, not tradition, but this kind of reputation of being one step ahead of the curve. And whenever they sacked a manager, most of the time it was because they already had the replacement, you know, in their bag. And that most of those moments came thanks to the, you know, thanks to the knowledge and wise overall management of José Manuel Llaneza, who is no longer with us. Unfortunately, he passed away last year, I believe. Yeah, it was very weird for Villarreal actually sacking a manager and not having, you know, at least talk to the replacement. So if we leave that aside, Villarreal really wanted Raúl to be the one in charge. And Raúl was, you know, ready in some sense to listen to Villarreal's offer. Actually, Real Madrid were ready to let him go because ultimately, whenever you leave or you release a manager from his contract, when you are Real Madrid, 99% of the time, you know that if the time comes around and you ask that manager to be back, that manager is going to be there in a heartbeat. Okay, so Real Madrid were ready to release Raúl, and actually they had already spoken with Arbeloa, who is in charge of the on the under 19s. But ultimately Raúl was I don't know if he got cold feet, but or maybe not beginning an actual season with a new squad and having to, you know, settle into an already established locker room with players whom he might know or others he might not really know at this point. But ultimately, I believe that it was Raúl the one who said that, you know, he turned down the offer because ultimately he's waiting for his chance in Real Madrid. The way I see it, or at least, you know, per sources, I have more or less understood that Raúl is managing Real Madrid Castilla. He was very close, remember, last season of promoting to Segunda División. Lost the chance against Eldense in the literal last minutes of the knockout. And just in case things go awry this year under Ancelotti, which I believe isn't going to happen, but, you know, this is football and you never know, Raúl is just playing the waiting game because he firmly believes that eventually he'll become the manager for the first team. And that's why he turned down the offer. And Pacheta was the number two, the second runner-up. And I think that it was this kind of debate, which I kick-started a couple of hours ago on my Twitter feed, with names like Mendilibar landing in Sevilla or Pacheta landing in Villarreal. And I have many questions about that, about the fact that maybe those kind of, you know, lower profile managers are really having their first chance or their real first shot at greatness with good squads, because most of them are really used to, you know, scrap for
relegation fight
and for salvation with Valladolid or Mendilibar back in the day with Eibar or with Levante back in the day. Okay, so seeing those profiles land really big gigs at Villarreal or Sevilla, you know, it made me think about if we are finding ourselves in the middle of a manager drought over here in Spain, because most of the top tier talent is ultimately leaving for other and greener pastures. And Iraola is the perfect example of that. Yeah. Unai Emery is the perfect example of that. Ultimately, they are going for Premier League positions and jobs.
It was reported, it was reported that Lopetegui, while he hasn't got a club, he was still saying that he'd rather wait for a Premier League job to come about rather than take a La Liga job.
And that's what made me think about this. You know, I was thinking that maybe it's true that, you know, it was finally due eventually that these profiles or these managers had a shot of, you know, coaching big sides or like second-tier sides, because obviously Atletico, Real Madrid and Barca are in another dimension. But we're talking about Real Sociedad, Imanol Alguacil. We're talking about Betis, Pellegrini. Alguacil was promoted from the academy, and that's another whole different story. But Pellegrini has, you know, very large and very experienced resume, and in that sense, Betis made a huge signing with him. But he had that gravitas with him. But Sevilla are taking a chance with Mendilibar. Villarreal are taking a chance with Pacheta. Valencia, for example, took a chance with Baraja. Even though Valencia aren't fighting for the top spots of the Liga, and they are just destined to, you know, fight for to avoid relegation once again, which, by the way, is another item of the week. Finally, Valencia's management spoke clearly, and Lei Hun Chan, the president, said that Valencia are aspiring this season to just remain in La Liga. That's the main goal. Not Champions League, not Europa League, not Conference League, nothing. Just remaining in La Liga. And about Pacheta, I think that he did a great job at Valladolid, and I think that if he wasn't sacked for, it was Pezzolano, right? I think that was one of those you know, Ronaldo Nazario fits that
from
he
Cruzeiro.
Had, and he still has, by the way. I think that if Pacheta had remained, Valladolid would have had bigger chances of staying in La Liga, but you know, unfortunately for them, there was a change of manager, and things weren't south for them. I think Pacheta might fit well with Villarreal squad, because he's that kind of manager who likes to speak a lot with the players, who is very plain in the good sense. You know, he doesn't really like to stand out, and he prefers the players to be the main protagonists. And I think that Villarreal went to a very specific profile. And ultimately, this is Pacheta's biggest club ever in top flight, and his biggest challenge ever. So I'm very interested to see if he's able to succeed. I hope he does, because I followed most of his career. You know, I'm one of those who watched him back in the day play, because Pacheta was a player before becoming a manager, and think his experience after in the lower tier divisions of the Spanish football, later in second division, it has been always very cohesive and very straightforward. He never lied to anyone. He has never promised anything that he couldn't deliver. And I think it would be a triumph for Pacheta and Villarreal if he did a good job over there.
Yeah, intriguing to see how that one goes. I think he's been fairly unlucky in his job so far. He took Elche from Segunda B to La Liga, but then couldn't coach them in La Liga. They made a change over that summer after promotion. He then took Huesca from bottom to just one goal away from salvation. And then, like you say, by the lead last season, they were out of the relegation zone when he was sacked. So, yeah, who knows? They may have stayed up if they'd have stuck with him.
But Big mistake.
Yeah, we're fast running out of time, though. So, Paco, you want to talk about Sergio Ramos. So, the floor is yours.
I think it's one of the greatest news of the summer for La Liga, which has been slowly losing top talent to other competitions. When you talk about the Premier League, you know, that's the first culprit, but you also have the Saudi Arabia League and, you know, other destinations. So Sergio Ramos, you know, giving up plenty of money, a lot of money, and leaving aside other very yummy offers to, you know, go back home and come back home to Sevilla. He said that in his first statement and his first press conference, that going back to his roots, and, you know, it was a big homage to his father and his grandparents and his whole family.
Porque al final hemos sido sevillistas siempre de cuna. Y bueno, el último recuerdo que tengo de mi abuelo es muy feo, ¿no? Que es yéndose de aquí, viendo cómo la gente pitaba a su nieto, ¿no?
I think that is, you know, a signing which Sevillismo and Sevilla really needed after a very lackluster couple of first games this season. And obviously he's going to improve the team, you know, because Sergio Ramos, even though he's not as fast as he was, his physicality is not the same as 5-6 years ago. He has the maturity, he has the experience, he has the leadership that Sevilla really needed inside the locker room. I think that Mendilibar is going to really, really be thankful for having that kind of, you know, player who he can be supported by and support in exchange. And it's going to be like his big extension inside the pitch. So huge news, massive news for Sevilla fans. I don't know a single Sevilla fan who is unhappy about this signing. And overall, I think it's, as I said, great news for La Liga, because he is going to deliver both inside the pitch and especially, you know, in press conferences and outside the pitch. He's going to be very, you know, a deliverer of spicy quotes. And that is great news for us all.
It certainly is. I mean, well, you say no one's unhappy, but the Viris Norte, the ultras, they released a comunicado, very strongly worded, saying that they reject the decision and that it's a lack of respect given his past goading of Sevilla fans when he played for Real Madrid. So they certainly need to be convinced, and Ramos will know that. But equally, if you see the footage of his presentation, the Ramos Sanchez Pizjuan. You will see that the majority of the Sevilla fans there absolutely love to see him back. And it's just a great story.
100% positive that those BDs signing the statement, which is, you know, absolutely respectable by anyone. If Sergio Ramos plays consistently well for 5 games and scores a couple of headers, they will change their mind. Because this is football. We've seen this example 1,000 times before, and we will keep seeing it in the future.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much, Paco, for your insight as ever. You can turn your fan on again now.
Yeah, let's listen to the button, you know. Oh, yes.
Oh, sweet relief.
The button of greatness. Button of greatness.
Listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast and any of our other podcasts, we would love it if you upgraded your subscription on Substack, llonline.substack.com. Paco, what do they need to do?
They need to upgrade. They absolutely need to upgrade. It's not a choice. It's a necessity. Okay, so you guys should do that, especially as, you know, there's a league going on. We don't have a weekend with matches here and there, but we have plenty of news coming your way, and that's exactly what we did in the last 30-something minutes.
Indeed, and plenty of written content on the Substack as well. Ben Sully's got a great piece out on Lamine Yamal making history, so check that out and upgrade your subscription. We'll be very thankful for that. We think it's great value, and we would love it if you would upgrade. So thanks again, Paco. Enjoy the fan, and we'll speak to you again soon. Thanks for listening. Adios. Como la carrera de Nico Williams buscando el séptimo para España. Pelota suelta para Lamine Yamal. Gol. Gol. De España, Lamine Yamal. 16 años. 57 días, no hay mejor debut posible, con gol incluido, el séptimo para España.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.